Good morning. It's 7:33. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Ben Aduccio. Testimony pertaining to the chemical leak continued in the Senate even after the chamber approved its bill to regulate above-ground storage facilities. A joint water commission heard from an environmental scientist continuing to do his own water quality testing throughout the contaminated distribution system. As Ashton Mara reports, lawmakers are now calling his results shocking.
By now, you've probably heard of crude MCHM, the chemical that spilled into the Elk River in early January, contaminating the drinking water of 300,000 West Virginians. And maybe you've even heard of PPH, the second chemical contained in the leaky tank at the Freedom Industries site. But 3 weeks after the leak, how much do we really know about these chemicals? Scott Simonton says not much, and certainly not enough.
Based on my experience, I would be shocked if MCHM and the contaminants resulting from this latest catastrophic event are the only ones emanating from that facility. It's a very old facility, old tanks, and again, in my experience, I could bet you that other things have leaked from that site.
Simonton is the vice chair of the State Environmental Quality Board and a professor at Marshall University. He says one of the biggest questions is what happens to these chemicals when they begin to react with the environment. What happens when they mix with chlorine in the water treatment facility? What happens when they mix with soaps or detergents in your home? What happens when the human body metabolizes them? Questions that don't have answers. With funding from the Charleston law firm Thompson Barney, which is also representing the businesses that lost money during the water crisis, Simonton is testing the water supply and hoping to find those answers.
We know, for example, that methanol can break down to formaldehyde. So our concern was these breakdown products. Formaldehyde is a known human carcinogen. That's important. And so we thought, wow, we should be looking for formaldehyde. And sure enough, we have found formaldehyde in the water system.
Test results were positive for one site in downtown Charleston. A carcinogen that Simonton says is most dangerous when inhaled. Formaldehyde often leads to respiratory cancers.
We don't know what the concentration of is in air, but I can guarantee you that the citizens of this valley are, at least in some instances, breathing formaldehyde. If they're taking a hot shower, this stuff is breaking down to formaldehyde in the shower or in the water system, and they're inhaling it.
The new revelations and new information Simonton provided the commission is something Senate Majority Leader Senator John Unger says shocked him and his fellow lawmakers.
The testimony today was quite disturbing, and I think the State Water Resource Commission was kind of put back quite a bit, because that's not the information that we've been hearing as far as from the news media. So what he's testified today was the hard truth, and it definitely was very difficult.
Simonton told the commission the information state officials released in the days during the chemical leak, information about when the water was safe for use and consumption, he can't find what evidence they had to back it. Unger was concerned with that information as well.
What concerns me is the information they were giving out as if they did know. And that's also was brought up, that, you know, where they were saying, go ahead and drink it. It's okay, safe now. Well, we've heard from both on Friday from the U.S. Chemical Board that it wasn't, and now today with Dr. Simonton that it's not safe to drink. And so to me, I think that that's where the disappointment is that these authorities are saying things without having proper science backing up. They do not know, but they're going ahead and saying it anyhow, and we're still uncertain about that, even exposing people even more and also elevating the risk of people's health even more by doing this. So we really have to get a handle on this and really truly tell the people the truth about what's going on with it. It's their lives, and we need to tell them the truth.
Tuesday, senators passed Senate Bill 373, creating new regulations for similar above-ground storage facilities, and called it step one in preventing future water contamination. But Unger says figuring out the health effects, that has to be part of step one as well.
We need to do it simultaneously. We need to be moving forward. I mean, the whole idea of Senate Bill 373 is to make sure it doesn't happen again anywhere in West Virginia. Now we have to look at What do we do in response to now it's happened? And this is an ongoing situation that's unraveling as we get more and more information. And how do we help those individuals, that those people that have been exposed to it, which is all of us here in Charleston and Kanawha Valley in some manner?
Going forward, Unger says lawmakers will rely on the medical community to monitor and figure out ways to treat anyone exposed to the chemical. His commission hopes to hear from the Department of Health and Human Resources on monitoring in the next week. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
In a response to the presentation, Dr. Letitia Tierney, commissioner for the State Bureau for Public Health, called the findings unfounded and says they do not speak to the health and safety of West Virginians. Tierney says the World Health Organization states formaldehyde can be created through the normal breakdown cycle of plants and animals and is naturally produced in small amounts in the human body. She says it easily dissolves in water and does not stay present for long. The Bureau for Public Health says they are not aware of the specifics of Dr. Simonton's study, and he was not part of the state's internal testing team. His findings are his opinion, and he speaks in no official state capacity. The House of Delegates passed five bills yesterday, among them a Senate bill to supplement appropriations from lottery net profits to the Division of Natural Resources and the Bureau of Senior Services. But the main point of debate on the floor was over another House resolution. Aaron Payne reports.
The House currently has one member that cannot participate in voting or House activities due to military service. Delegate Joshua Nelson has been absent for the second session of the 81st legislature while on active duty. House Resolution 6 would allow participation for Nelson and future members not physically present while serving in the military in House proceedings and voting by electronic teleconferencing. Due to the wording of the movement, a green vote would oppose the resolution and a red vote would be in support of the resolution. Debate between the two sides arose with over 10 delegates speaking on their personal stance on the matter, including the resolution's sponsor, Delegate Jim Butler.
Technology's changing. We have iPads, we have Skype, we have Facebook, we're on an automated system here. We're doing a lot of things now that people, you know, 100 years ago had no concept of. So I think that this, well, another thing, West Virginia here, we are per capita the highest percentage of military veterans in the country. So wouldn't it be fitting if West Virginia did this?
Delegate Kevin Craig countered that voting members of the House should be present for their legislative duties.
We owe it to our constituents and to our citizens to show up at the Capitol and be accountable and be present for them so that they can interact with us. This is not something we should do via conference call. This is not something we should participate in the debates when we have time. We should be here at the Capitol and be here on the floor of the House like it's demanded that we be at your seat to vote. We can't stand out behind the chamber and vote. You have to be here and your name's on the board. So we're accountable to our people.
The motion to reject the resolution was adopted by a vote of 66 to 29. Well, after the vote and the passage of five bills, the debate continued on with Delegate John Schott pointing out a similar situation that occurred in the Senate.
At the request of Senator Unger, unanimous consent being granted, Senator Wells, who is currently on active duty with the United States Navy Reserve in Afghanistan, was permitted to vote by voice in accordance with Article 6, Section 44 of the West Virginia Constitution through electronic means for the election of the Senate President as required by Article 6, Section 24 of the West Virginia Constitution to fill the vacancy in the office caused by the resignation of the senior senator from the 7th District, which suggests to me how quickly we've abandoned our admiration of the Senate and how inconsistent we are in our actions here in the House.
However, Delegate Randy Swartzmiller was quick to point out what made that situation different.
To clarify that that was not a floor session where staff was gathered, press was gathered, staff was gathered. That was a one-time caucus vote.
For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Aaron Payne in Charleston.
This is West Virginia Morning at 7:42.
In the weather for the Mountain State today, sunny with highs in the 20s and 30s. Clear and not as cold overnight tonight. Lows in the teens and 20s, and partly sunny again tomorrow with highs in the 30s and 40s. Clouds will move in overnight on Friday, and wind chill values in the higher elevations could reach back down into around 2 degrees below zero. But clouds and rain and snow showers could move into the forecast Saturday and Sunday. Three county school systems have now closed this morning due to the weather. They include Pendleton, Pocahontas, and Upshur counties. Another 48 county schools are operating on two-hour delays. And the following counties remain open today: Berkeley, Jefferson, Kanawha, and Morgan counties. Support provided by the West Virginia Division of Rehabilitation Services, enabling and empowering workers with disabilities to meet business workforce needs. Visit WVDRS.org for employer services.
In light of recent reports of formaldehyde found in drinking water, Glennis Board reached out to experts who have been studying the matter and brings us this report.
Mark Glass is a principal researcher in charge of evaluation and remediation of environmental contamination in soil and water for the environmental consulting firm Downstream Strategies. He's been testing water samples for private residents affected by the Elk River chemical spill. While his results haven't turned up any traces of formaldehyde, it is something he's been testing for.
You know, the MCHM does break down the breakdown process starts pretty quickly. The half-life for it is estimated at approximately 14 days, I believe. So, you know, you can expect about half of whatever was released from a given point in time will have broken down into other products within about 14 days. But the more breakdown products you find, the longer ago it makes you think the spill started.
That's the big question burning in Glass's mind. What kind of time frame are we really talking about? Glass says it shouldn't be difficult to find out.
And a real straightforward way to do that is to just reconcile the inventory for Freedom Industries. You know, they know what their deliveries or the raw products that they purchased and brought into their site, and they know what they sold. If there's a difference between what they brought in and what they sold, then that has to be assumed, you know, that it was released in the environment in some way. And I think we should start looking at that, and I think we should start looking at that at a much longer term than just a few hours or days prior to the spill. I think we should take, for starters, maybe like a three-year period and look at their record keeping for that.
Glass says the Environmental Protection Agency, under the guidance of the Centers for Disease Control, has determined that small exposures to formaldehyde, about one part per million in drinking water, is not expected to cause adverse health effects.
They further determined that they don't think that 10 parts per million consumed in drinking water for a day or 5 parts per million for 10 days is also not expected to cause any adverse health effects. That's why the concentrations and the amount of time that a particular concentration somebody has had exposure to that is relevant to assessing the health impacts.
That's not the only question Glass has.
I'm also curious about what's in the soil at the site, because this was released from a tank and went across or through soil prior to getting into the Elk River. So maybe there were other contaminants. This place has been a tank farm that's, you know, had products stored on site for apparently decades. So, you know, the accidental spills and releases and other things could be present in the soil. And if those are present in the soil and you put a solvent like MCHM into the mix, then you're going to mobilize contaminants that were already in the soil and maybe not reaching surface water. So I'd really like to get a characterization of that site vertically and horizontally to know really what we should be looking for.
Glass says it's frustrating to have so many unanswered questions when he's asked by residents if the water is safe. He says basic information key to safeguarding the community is simply out of reach. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glennis Board in Morgantown.
It's been a rough winter for most county school systems in West Virginia, with many having to cancel school because of weather and contaminated water. As Cecilia Mason reports, in many cases, the counties won't be able to meet the goal of reaching 180 days of classroom instruction.
West Virginia State School Superintendent Jim Ferris was previously superintendent in Randolph County, so dealing with winter weather to him is the norm. But for many counties, this is an unusual school year.
in Kanawha Valley with the water issues, this is way past normal. They normally make all their days up easily with days to spare. This year, because of the water crisis, they're not going to be able to do that.
Ferris says it is unusual to have weather that impacts the entire state the way it has this year, forcing counties to cancel school because of snow and extremely frigid temperatures.
The issues with cold mainly deal with the equipment of transportation and also the safety issue of having small children out in sub-zero-like weather. Particularly when you have wind chill factors involved, you know, you kind of have a perfect, I hate to use this word, but a perfect storm in this matter, in that you had snow in some areas, significant levels of snow, and you didn't have any melting conditions whatsoever. So everything either had to be pushed or salted away.
Ferris says most counties this year will probably not be able to meet the 180 days of instructional time. But starting July 1st, counties will have more flexibility to ensure students are in class that number of days. The legislature made changes during the 2013 session that requires counties to provide 180 days of instruction and expands the employment period for teachers from 43 to 48 weeks. The law also requires counties to make up instructional time by lengthening the school day, scheduling classes on non-instructional days, or extending the school calendar.
The big picture is that we wanted to give counties as much flexibility as possible as they built their calendars so that they would be deciding when their students are in school and Charleston wouldn't be.
Ferris says the law requires each county to conduct two public hearings before finalizing next year's calendar. In the meantime, he says counties can make up for some of the missed days this year by converting instructional support and professional development days that students traditionally have off to instruction time. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Cecilia Mason in Martinsburg.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our news director is Beth Voorhees. Our director is Bob Powell. Good morning.